Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Later in the show, we'll hear from Sophia Axelsson, who's the goalkeeper for Clapton FC. She'll be telling us more about the pretty, is one word, disappointing prize money on offer in the women's game at the moment, and tell us how the club actually lost money on its highly successful FA Cup run this season. That's all to come, Kieran, but contrasting news in the FA Cup draw for us. We've got a nice plum tie against the non-league team at home, and you've got yet another dreary old Premier League game.
Yeah, the Baroness wants to visit Spurs' new stadium, so that's the one positive that I'm taking from it. And it should be a good game. We're playing well at present. Spurs... Yeah. Oh, very good on their day, but their day is a bit hit up and down at present.
Yeah, we were the first team to play in the new Spurs Stadium, which was an interesting experience. but that was the end of one season, and then we played them at the beginning of. So we became the first team to lose there, and then the first team to lose there twice. And now I believe we're the first team to lose there four times.
Right.
That's a run we'll keep going. But before we talk to Sophia, and it's a really interesting and slightly disheartening interview, there are some news stories, Kieran, some quite hefty ones as well. Firstly, a PFA official has been suspended as part of an investigation into its charitable arm.
Yes. The PFA, it gets a lot of attention, as we know. It is actually split into two elements. There is the PFA union, which looks after the interests of the members, and then there is the PFA charity. Now, the PFA charity has got £62 million worth of assets, which it uses to fund events. We're aware that some of those assets might look a little bit unusual. They've got some paintings by Lowry and so on. And they've got a lot of cash and so on. The Charity Commission has instigated a statutory inquiry, which with reference to conflicts of interest. And I think historically there have been people who have been part of the union who are also sitting on the charity. And of course, that can give a conflict of interest, because if the union, for example, says, we'd like an extra £100,000 or an extra £500,000 to go into the investigation of dementia in respect of members and former members, which is fully understandable. You then have to wait for the charity to say, oh, we'll give that some thought. And I get the impression that things aren't perhaps moving as quickly as they could in respect of some of the requests from the union. There are legacy issues in terms of management. I won't go into too many details, but I once gave somebody a reference for a job at PFA HQ, and she didn't stay there too long, and I wrote her a reference for another job. But the story she told me about how the place was run.
Right.
Did not reflect well. I'll say no more than that.
Yeah.
And hopefully, things are making progress. We've spoken to Meheta. I think he wants to accelerate things on behalf of the members. So the Charity Commission, said it's got serious concerns. The Charity Commission doesn't say things like that. That is management speak for.
Yeah.
We're pretty cheesed off. So hopefully this will be resolved, and most importantly, the PFA charity supports a lot of fantastic causes, and I think that is under-reflected in some of the comments, because it's a lot easier, and I do exactly the same. It's a lot easier to focus on Gordon Taylor's salary, and I think that has taken away from a lot of the really good work which has been undertaken historically. So. It looks as if one person has been removed from a senior position, and we await to see future developments.
Yeah. Just for newer listeners, Kieran, remind them who Maheto is that you spoke to.
Well, Maheto is the new head of the Professional Footballers Association. He is an ex-professional footballer himself who also subsequently became a lawyer. I think he's got a degree in law, and he is very keen on moving the PFA forwards in terms of education and support for members, because there was a legacy issue in terms of 40 years of the same people running the organisation, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's good for continuity, but sometimes a new look and a new perspective can be of benefit.
Yeah, Maheto replaced Gordon Taylor, who we believe is now retired to his lair under a volcano.
That's right.
And talking of troubles and troubling practices, the government is currently conducting a review into the gambling industry, and Chris Philp, who's the gambling minister, has told MPs he's seeing extremely troubling practices from some of the big operators. Kieran, this is a story we're covering on virtually a weekly basis, and it seems to me that the Rolling Stone is gathering a lot of moss now, and I can't see any other outcome for this than gambling not being allowed anywhere near football within the next decade, is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Philp, he's a Palace fan, by the way.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh dear. It's hard enough having to like Tracy Crouch. Don't ask me to start liking another Tory minister, Kieran, just because he's a Palace fan.
Tracy's wonderful.
Tracy's wonderful, but Chris Philp is now my second favourite government minister.
Right.
Which doesn't take a lot of doing, to be fair, Kieran. That doesn't take a lot of doing, to be honest.
So what are these troubling practices? So I've had a look at Hansard, and he's not gone into specifics apart from saying it's in relation to some of the online activities, and an awful lot of football betting takes place online.
Yeah.
But, you know, my concerns would be free bets and free spins. That's a gateway drug.
Absolutely.
You know, there is no doubt about it. It's the equivalent of having a drugs dealer outside a school offering freebie bags. And that can lead to things. There's an awful lot of promotion of Akkas. Akkas are big winners. There's also
Akkas,
the fact...
Yeah, Akkas, again, for people not in the ITK about betting, Akkas are accumulators, which is where you bet on several things to happen at once. So it's hard enough to win one bet. So they encourage you to bet on the results of six or seven games, which, is, of course, is much, much, much harder.
Absolutely. But if you are a successful gambler, the slogan of the gambling industry is "When the fun stops, stop." Yeah. That's often when the fun stops. That's when you've got huge debts. That's when you're contemplating taking your own life. That's when you've got domestic violence and relation split ups. But as far as the gambling industry is concerned, when the fun stops, it's normally because they've got somebody who's a successful customer, and all they do is just close down their accounts. It's hypocrisy. And there's also been issues this weekend, which have been highlighted to us from some of the people that listen to the show, is that, as we know, we just had the FA Cup, and I think it was a fantastic weekend of FA Cup football. I know not all of the there wasn't many giant slayed, but Shrewsbury took the lead at Liverpool, and the same happened at Spurs, it was genuinely exciting stuff.
Cambridge beat Newcastle
results.
We'll keep repeating that.
But if your match was not taking place live, and for whatever reason you're unable to go, what you had to do is to open up an account with a bookmaker, because they have the streaming rights for all of the remaining matches. And I think that's with William Hill or Bet365. Yeah. And there has been something about this in the press to say, well, the FA is going to end it, but it's still going to continue until 2024 because it's going to cost the FA too much to walk away from the deal now. They'd have to presumably to give compensation to the gambling industry. And if there's one industry that probably doesn't deserve any compensation, it's the gambling industry. So, this is a cause of concern. And my reservation is that if we just go for a ban on football shirts and front of shirt advertising. It's not addressing the issue because there's still the huge sums being spent on marketing. There's still the perimeter advertising taking place. So it might not be on the shirt, but if it's advertising a gambling company and it's whizzing around on an LED display, it's just an element of tokenism. And I suspect that the big gambling companies, with the exception of Bet365, none of them actually sponsor individual clubs. They would be not bothered in the least. And they talk about having a whistle-to-whistle ban, and they try to make that sound rather grandiose, and it's a huge commitment by them. A whistle-to-whistle ban actually means that they don't advertise their products at halftime.
Yeah.
And that's it. But what you will find is that the TV program is being sponsored by a gambling company. So it says, this match is being sponsored by such and such a gambler. So you're not advertising it, but by golly, you're getting as damn close to it as can be.
In respect to the FA Cup games being streamed on gambling sites, the gambling industry would probably point out that Premier League games are streamed on Amazon. You know, twice a season, there's a whole block of games on Amazon, and Amazon's a company associated with many problems of its own, the way they treat their staff, for example. So they would probably point to an element of hypocrisy there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but I mean, I've got an Amazon Prime account. Yeah, it's not addictive. You know, I get my Wonky Chomps from it. I'm not ordering them from Wonky Chomps every single day. Amazon aren't texting me. Amazon aren't sending me emails as to, have you thought about buying this? Yeah, if you go on Amazon Prime, it will come up with a list of things to suggest that you buy. But I think it's very tenuous. Ultimately, Amazon is a retailer, and you know, we can look at the whole of the retail industry. IKEA have just been up because they are going to
lower
reduce
the wages. Yeah. We're both trying to say the lowering wages of unvaccinated workers. Yeah, so go sick. Yeah. Do you think Finley might be addicted to Wonky Chomps?
I think he is. Although, there was before the show started, there was a knock on the door, and I thought it was our regular supply because we are actually on a we get them supplied on every 6 weeks now,
of course,
automatically. And again, perhaps you could say that's down to Amazon Prime because they're the people that supply them. But it turns out that we've mentioned pies on the show before. Well, the pie company has sent me a huge hamper stuffed full of pies.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is very nice of Piglets.
That's lovely, considering we've mentioned pies quite a lot on the show, Kieran. I'm glad that they sent you the box of pies. Yeah, just in terms of Finley and his mental health, Finley's a dog, by the way, for new listeners. In 5.5 weeks into that 6 week cycle, is he anxious? Is he looking at the door constantly? Is he?
heard him on Sunday.
Yeah, I did hear him on Sunday. He had a proper fit on Sunday, didn't he? As indeed you did when you were chasing him around the house. Talking of the FA Cup third round, one or two of the games were played behind closed doors, and the EFL has appealed now to the Welsh Government over the ban on fans at games in Wales because of COVID-19 regulations.
Yes, I mean, the EFL has three members, Cardiff, Swansea and Newport, who play in their competition. And as we're aware, the Welsh Government has introduced stricter rules in respect of who can and cannot attend. And it does seem a bit strange that people can still meet indoors, but they can't meet outdoors. Mm. And I think there was a letter from Trevor Birch. You know, Trevor's a friend of the show.
Yeah.
We don't know the exact details, but broadly along the lines that for each set of fixtures, it's costing those clubs somewhere in the region of $400,000 in terms of lost match day takings. But also, it does impact upon the supply chain because we both sent photographs of what we were doing at the weekend for our FA Cup games, and you were helping to support a local establishment from 9:30 in the morning, and I went to a fantastic curry pub in the West Midlands, and you know, football fans put their money where their mouths are.
Newcastle at the moment, from our point of view, are the gift that keep on giving in terms of news. And Mike Ashley has launched legal action against Amanda Staveley, the financier who led the Saudi-backed takeover of Newcastle United, and who football TV directors can't resist cutaways to Amanda Staveley every time something bad happens on the pitch at Newcastle. So what's this about, Kieran?
Well, all that we know is that there is a there are legal proceedings. It looks like the relationship between Mike Ashley and Amanda Staveley, which has been volatile. If you look at some of the comments that he's made over the course of, you know, it was a 3-year dalliance before the takeover finally took place. Is that he is taking some action against her. Mike Ashley is a fairly litigious individual. You've only got to see what has happened between Mike Ashley's companies and Rangers Football Club. If he gets what he considers to be a good deal, he's like a dog with a bone. Rangers fans are probably as unhappy with Mike Ashley as Newcastle fans, yeah, because their club has suffered on the back of that. So I did a bit of digging, and I came across Amanda Staveley's company is called PCP Capital Partners. And in April 2020, they took out a charge. Now, a charge is another, sort of legalese for a mortgage from a company called St. James's Holdings. And St. James's Holdings just happens to be Mike Ashley's company, which owns Newcastle United, or owned Newcastle United. So it looks as if St. James's Holdings has lent money to PCP Capital Partners. Now, has that money subsequently been used to then buy Amanda Staveley's 10% of Newcastle United? Is there some sort of, now we're into some form of circularity, does PCP Partners now have to repay that money to St. James's? We don't know. So it is conjecture, but there have been historic links between Mike Ashley's vehicles and Amanda Staveley's vehicles. And as I said earlier, if you don't do exactly what Mike Ashley's contract says, he will come on to you, with like a ton of hot bricks. Well, if there's such a thing.
There must be somewhere along the line, there must have been a ton of hot bricks.
Yes.
So there's no, you wouldn't just make that up, would you? Just in general, though, if Amanda Staveley did borrow money from Mike Ashley to use to fund part of the bid for Newcastle, would that in general be illegal or irregular? Or
no, that's perfectly
right,
perfectly acceptable, perfectly within the remit of the law.
Okay, that makes me wonder if NatWest worry that I'm asking money from them so I can buy NatWest. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Former Ipswich Town chairman Marcus Evans is looking to buy a stake in Huddersfield Town. Huddersfield Town are a team whose finances have been slightly up and down in the past few years. So it's interesting that he's looking to make a comeback up there.
Yes. The present owner of Huddersfield Town, his other businesses, some of those have gone into administration. So right, we don't know the state of his finances. I think Huddersfield Town fans have felt disappointed because they were owned by a guy who got Dean Hoyle, I think it was, yeah, who under Dean Hoyle they got up to the Premier League. They survived that first season. They did really well, there was a feel good factor in the town. It then was relegated. Dean Hoyle sold 75%, I think it was, of the club, because I think he had some personal issues to deal with. And the person that bought it, this is where things start to get a little bit confusing. It looks as if, and we're not certain of this, it looks as if perhaps the parachute payments and the money which Huddersfield then received when they dropped it back down into the EFL, was that then used to pay the old owner? We're not certain about that, but right, it looks like the present owner is looking to move on. Now, I think Marcus Evans, his relationship with Ipswich Town fans was fractious stroke toxic. And it's another one of these intriguing things. Yeah, we've spoken about it in terms of Preston with Trevor Hemmings. You've got somebody that buys into a football club and is prepared to put in £7, 8, 9 million a year to keep the club in its present position. And then the fans start to get ungrateful. Yeah, they say, oh, you know, lack of ambition. Well, you know, if you're putting millions of pounds into a football club on a year-by-year basis, and frankly, you're not getting a huge amount out of it, apart from abuse from fans, you wonder why some of these people actually stick in the game. But football is a seductive industry. You know, as the Smiths sang on their debut album, it's like a moth to a flame. And Marcus Evans looks like he wants to come back, a bit like Mike Ashley potentially wants to come back, and he has a bad relationship because it's unique. It's unique for us as fans in terms of our relationship with the club, and it looks like it's unique as far as owners are concerned as well. They could have a horrendous relationship with one set of fans, and then you would think they're going to walk away and say never again. And almost straight away, they're back saying, "Well, I can do it differently this time with a different set of fans, different set of circumstances."
Now, I like the fact that producer Guy has tucked this next story away towards the end of the stories because he knows my attention span very well. He obviously thought that by now I'll have drifted off a little bit, and I might not be really paying full attention to this story, and I might just read it out and make no comment to it, but producer Guy's wrong because I've been really looking forward to telling this story. So West Brom and Brighton, Kieran, have successfully secured 10-year trademarks for the names The Albion and Albion with respect to merchandise, which is bad news for a pub in South Norwood called The Albion. What they're going to do, they'll be getting sued by West Brom and Brighton. They'll be, the poor little bloke who runs it will be waking up one morning, there's two letters on his doormat. You know, you're going to be sued. I hesitate to ask you this, Kieran, but which of you have secured the Albion and which has secured Albion? So, for example, when you get more free pies, are they the Albion pies or just Albion pies?
Well, yeah, this is a weird one. And my main concern is that there's Albion Kebabs just down from the station at Brighton, which has got blue and white stripes on the livery there. And you know, when it is 11 o'clock at night, where else do you turn but to the spinning lamp?
Yeah. Of course, but does a kebab count as merchandise though? Would the Albion kebab shop say this is not merchandise? This is a product. See, this is
well,
the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you take a look, and in terms of trademark law, you can have identical products and identical trademarks or style of trademarks. If you think about, you know, the Rampant Lion, well, both Millwall and Chelsea have those on their crest. You've got Hitchin and Norwich; they both have canaries. Yeah. Mattel, it turns out, have a trademark for the word Chelsea. But as that's a doll, although opportunity here to talk about plastic fans, of course, yeah. Stamford Bridge. But I wouldn't sink that though. Some words have been trademarked many times. It looks as if speaking to somebody who is ITK with IP law. Is that it's the aim of stopping the half and half scarf brigade outside matches, and I know what some people are saying. Well, how often do people sell half and half scarves outside Brighton matches? Once is once too many, as far as I'm concerned. What you can't do, you can't use the crest of the club, you can't use, say, Brighton Hove Albion, and what I think both Brighton and West Brom are doing is to stop them using this one more word. So that's it. It's about as 2022 a story as you can get that. Yeah, so, clubs are taking these actions. So if you use the word Albion, and I know some people will say, well, hold on, it's a word which has been as part of the English vocabulary for 1600 years, if you trace it all the way back. You can use the word for any other line of products with the exception of football-style merchandise.
Oh, that's kind of you. Yes, given us permission to use it. There are certain druids up and down the country who will be very upset to know that you've given them permission to use the word Albion when they're talking about King Arthur sleeping under a stone somewhere in Albion. So when Albion played the Albion in the FA Cup, trademark FA Cup, last Saturday, if some poor sod was outside the ground trying to sell half and half the Albion and Albion scarves, he would have been breaking the law, would he?
He would have been breaking the law, yes. So those blue and white stripes versus the blue and white stripes would have been a problem.
Yes, he's frankly, it's not the bloke who's selling the scarves. I don't mind him trying to make a few bob. It's the people buying half and half scarves.
Yes, I know.
Anybody over the age of seven who buys a half and half scarf is just... It's like grown-ups who buy Harry Potter scarves. I mean, I don't read the books by all means, but don't buy this. It's like walking around Oxford a couple of weeks ago. It's like, anyway, it's a story that's going to get mentioned again, Kieran.
I know.
It'll be coming back. No, you won't. unless, of course, Albion beat Palace, trademark Eagle, on Friday, in which case I'll keep stum. Jordan Ibe is suing AFC Bournemouth over a dispute around image rights payments.
Yes, Jordan Ibe is a director of a company called Chung Adunga Limited, and that has a legal claim against Bournemouth Football Club, AFC Bournemouth. And it looks as if, we've said this before, is that when a player signs a contract, there's effectively two contracts. There's an employment contract and there's an image rights contract. And it's a way of getting involved with some tax planning to try to reduce the player's overall tax bill. And it looks as if and normally HMRC will say, well, we will allow a player to have up to 20% of his overall package in the form of image rights. And that might be that's perfectly acceptable if you're a high profile player, you're in the media, that's fine. With no disrespect, if you're if you're Harrogate Town's left back, that's unlikely. They'll probably take a more a harsher view of the matters. But it looks as if Bournemouth have not released Jordan Ibe's image rights for the final year of his contract. Now he's not been at Bournemouth for over a season. He then went to Derby. I think he only played once there. At the same time, we are talking about a young man, and some of his out of the club activities haven't been great. For example, He crashed his Bentley into a coffee shop in Bromley. By all accounts, almost demolished the place and didn't stop. Just went off. So that brought attention. He's been disciplined for the club for his state and his efforts in training. So he's had some challenges and. I don't want to be seen by us. We're not going to be condemning him because we don't know exactly what's been taking place. But I think Bournemouth are taking the view is how can we pay somebody for image rights when perhaps the individual has damaged his own image?
Yeah, fair enough. We've talked a lot recently, Kieran, about the wage structure in Spanish football and the pay salary caps and all sorts of stuff. But Samuel Umtiti is taking a pay cut at Barcelona so he can extend his contract.
Well, yes, but this is actually, when we dig further, this is to allow Barcelona to register Ferran Torres whilst they signed him or when they announced his signing for around about 55 million at the end of December. Very much a marquee signing from City. And he's been a good player at the Etihad, although he's not necessarily being a first pick every time. Whilst they announced his signing, they couldn't play him because of the way that La Liga operates, in that you have effectively a football cost cap, which is the cost of the player's wages plus the amortization, and they compare that to how much you've got to pay out over the next 12 months in loans. So Barcelona have extended some of their loans, so therefore that reduces their repayments. So that's going to help them to satisfy La Liga rules, but they still had to get some costs over off the bill. So what they've done is that Umtiti's contract was due to expire in the summer of 2023, and let's say that he's on, you know, 5 million euros a year because he's signed, you know, with quite a decent deal. And what they've done is that they've said, well, instead of spending that next, you know, 5 or 6 million euros over the cost of the remainder of his contract, we're going to give him an extra 3 years, and we're going to he's agreed to take a pay cut to ensure that he stays at the Nou Camp for an extra 3 years, but he's not going to earn any more money in terms of his basic. Now, he might pick up additional money in terms of bonuses. He still has the cachet, the kudos of playing for Barcelona Football Club. And the second benefit is that it reduces the amortization charge, because the amortization charge is always charged over the remainder of the contract. So instead of amortization being charged between January 22 and June 23, we're now going to spread it over 4.5 years instead of 1.5 years. That reduces the cost. That frees up extra cash to pay for other things. So now they can register Ferran Torres, who unfortunately for him has just contracted COVID.
Yeah. Got one more story, Kieran, before our interview. And if you thought, as you claimed, that the Albion trademark story was very 2022, this story couldn't be more 2022. That's harder to say than Sussex's. I couldn't say Sussex's the other day. City Football Group, which owns Manchester City and other clubs, is looking for someone to, and I quote, identify growth opportunities within the metaverse. So if you're listening to this and your CV contains can identify growth opportunities within the metaverse, I would get in touch with Man City quite quickly, because they're looking for someone to identify growth opportunities within the metaverse.
Yes. And there is a website.
That's the response it deserves, Kieran. Yes.
Yes. There's a website called Jobs in Football, which, if people are interested in jobs in football, is quite a place to look. Good place to look for jobs in football. that's another BAFTA out the window.
That's the sort of advice you're paid top bucks to give. I'm looking for a job in football, Kieran. Well, I can recommend a website.
So this word metaverse has been created by our very good friend Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. And City are trying to increase their social media profile, as are many clubs. But to see those words in a job advert for football, and, you know, we are Pies and Pints legacy fans, it's a sad day for the game. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, where does the word Albion stand in the metaverse? I mean, is the metaverse, is Albion, I'm not entirely sure. I do know what the metaverse is, because it came up as a story in Have I Got News For You, but as you can guess, Kieran, I'm a guinea. Now, several weeks ago, we were discussing the unequal distribution of money between the men and women's football, following which Clapton Community FC got in touch to tell us the problems that can cause their women's team. So we spoke to goalkeeper Sophia Axelson to find out more.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Sophia, thank you very much for joining us. This is probably the most open question I've ever asked anyone. But before we talk about the finances of women's football, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to Clapton Community FC, and also a little bit about the club?
Right, yeah, sure. So my name is Sophia. I am from Sweden and I moved to London in 2015. After a few years, I decided I wanted to get back into football, having played it since I was 5 years old. And I found a local team called AFC Stoke Newington, which was a women's run women's club. Basically, we didn't have any coaches. We trained ourselves, sorted everything ourselves. And then just before the season 2019-2020, we were approached in one way or another, I'm not entirely sure on all the details, by Clapton CFC, who had started up the season before and wanted to have a women's team join their roster. And we had an internal vote and decided to go for it. So we've been part of Clapton CFC since that season.
Yeah, go on. Sorry, Sophia.
No, that's it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we very much approve of Clapton CFC on this show. We've spoken about them before, in particular the name of the ground, the Old Spotted Dog, which is brilliant, but also the attitude of the club as well. The kit, we've talked about that kit, because it's based on the international brigades from the Spanish Civil War, and also the community ethos. There's a slight left-wing feel about the club as well, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. You're also the general secretary for all the women's teams. So what does that entail?
So I do a lot of the backroom stuff, all the admin. I'm in touch with the FA. I'm in touch with the league. I register all of our players, make sure that we've got international clearance. I do a lot of the volunteering side on things as well. So I'm also part of like the comms committee, making sure that we've got all of our players, the lineup on the Twitter, and you know, yeah, lots of little things, basically all the admin stuff, and also organizing a lot of our away trips and making sure that we get there on time and within cost, because I also oversee some of our budget stuff.
Oh, well, we're going to come on to the travel issue shortly. The budget thing is interesting because the club, and I'm going to bring Kieran in on this, the club publishes monthly accounts on their website. For example, November 2021 income was £10,253.72 and spending was £29,449.65. Kieran, the loss isn't good, but the openness is excellent, isn't it?
Yes, and yeah, we've been in favour of transparency at all levels of football from day one, because we've seen what happens where things are more clandestine. And I think if you are open, it builds trust between all the parties, you know, players, fans, the people running the club, and so on. And you know, I think it sets a standard that a gold standard, as far as I'm concerned, that we should be proud of.
Sophia, where does most of that income of £10,200 come from?
It's still merch. It's the away shirt still sells quite a lot. We've got scarves and other things as well. And then there's also part. It comes from renewed memberships and match day experiences. So we've got a donation. We don't charge for entry, but we do have a bucket where people can donate a recommended amount.
Now, at the end of last year, in a brilliant achievement, you became the first ever seventh-tier women's side to reach the third round of the Women's FA Cup after, I should add, beating opponents four divisions above you, which has also never been done before. Then you were drawn away to Plymouth, which sounds like a good draw, but financially it was actually a real nuisance. Could you explain further?
Oh, yes, it was a bit of a nightmare, I have to say. I mean, we knew that for this round, for the third round, it was still regionalised to some degree. I guess the country was then divided into three parts, so north, middle and south. And we drew the furthest team that we could have possibly drawn. We don't have a travel budget as such. I think we have a few hundred pounds per year if we needed to travel by bus down to play someone in South London with bad connections or something. But we don't have a travel budget that would take us 500 for a 500-mile round trip. So as soon as we drew that team on the Monday, a group of us started discussing straight away what our best options would be. We reached out to the train company to see if we could get some kind of deal. And yeah, just a lot of research, making sure that we got there on time, but also at the cheapest possible way.
And the problem is, of course, when a men's team reaches the FA Cup third round, they get £82,000 for that. Women get £1,250, and that wasn't enough to cover the transport, was it? So you crowdfunded the travel cost in the end, but I believe, is that right?
Yeah, we did. We had to, because in total, after all of our wins in the FA Cup, we'd won £2,900. And we hadn't yet received all of this either, obviously. So, and we also had to get a bus, which cost us £650, to the Bedford game. So we'd already used some of the winnings. So at that point, we just had to decide what the best course of action would be, which would was to crowdfund. Terrible timing, given that we'd also just started a crowdfunder to build a changing rooms at the Old Spotted Dog. But we really didn't have much choice, because many of our players weren't in a position to pay for themselves either. And we can't just, you know, choose a team based on who can afford to travel or not.
Well, crowdfunding is brilliant, and it strikes me that your fan base, which is a brilliant fan base for a club playing at your level, it strikes me that they will be happy to keep putting their hands in their pockets. But you can't keep asking for crowdfunding. There comes a time when people go say, well, hang on a second, we paid for this, we paid for that. It puts you in an awkward situation, doesn't it?
It really does. And I did kind of struggle with the idea of starting it, and I was talking to someone else, one of our other volunteers who has a lot to do with the crowdfunding for OSD, and I said hopefully we can actually reach out to other people for this one, that we wouldn't have to ask our members to donate, and maybe ask, you know, colleagues and friends and family, which again doesn't feel great. We shouldn't have to do that, but maybe at least not put so much pressure on the membership again.
So, Kieran, how long does it normally take? I'm sure we've discussed this before, but you know my attention span. How long does it take the FA to cough up for teams like this when they've gone through the rounds? Do you have to be knocked out of the cup before you get the money that you've earned for being in it?
No, you should get some payments as you progress. But as you rightly said, Kevin, the FA... they're spinning a lot of plates all the time, and the focal point of teams coming from the lower tiers, I don't think it necessarily gets through to the FA that money is actually needed on a regular basis, because they're used to dealing with the England team, they're used to dealing with the FA Cup and the big teams in that, where it's less of a pressing issue. So it's not as quick as it could be.
And the thing is, Sophia, this £80,000 difference between the men and women for reaching the third round of the FA Cup, it really highlights the difficulties for women playing football at grassroots level, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It really does. That money could have, you know, made such a huge difference to us, as it does for the men's team that does reach this round. I mean, we've had some cup sets this weekend, and they will hugely benefit from that. But yeah, it would definitely have benefited us as well.
Yeah, I mean, equal pay would be nice. Is that what you want? Are you holding your breath for it to happen?
No, not at all. I don't think anyone is actually really striving for complete equality in terms of pay, because we do understand that there is a difference in what the teams bring in terms of support across the levels, but some like that disparity is just completely unnecessary. I mean, especially when you look at the fact that we don't even share gate receipts in the women's FA Cup. So, right, despite the fact that we've brought almost 1,500 people to all the games, because all of our games have been away games as well, we haven't had any of that money come back into the club.
Right. So what would the crowd have been at the Plymouth game eventually?
So I think we had about 270 or something, and over 200 of them had come from London.
Wow. And the result notwithstanding, you lost. But what was the experience like?
It was heartbreaking, but also quite amazing. The fact that we'd gotten this far and that we'd had all of these people backing us. And they just kept singing. And we were dancing and singing with them until we got back to London Paddington. It just did not stop. And
brilliant.
That was just fantastic.
Yeah. I noticed in one interview that your captain, Alice Nutman, she referred to the FA banning women's football for pretty much five decades, which they did for the 1920s through to the late 70s, because they were scared of the popularity of women's football back in the 20s. Do you think that attitude still prevails amongst some people at the FA, that there's still not a commitment, there's still a slight distaste towards women's football that there has been for such a long time?
I can't really speak much about that. I don't really know the reasons behind things, but I do think that they tend to forget that there are women's sides below the WSL and below the National League, because there's been a lot of effort to highlight that. And especially, I think something really changed after the 2019 World Cup. I feel like there were more teams popping up all across the country, and more people were sat down and watching the games as well. And you saw sold out games, and you saw almost 80,000 people go and watch England versus Germany at Wembley. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic, but the support further down is close to non-existent.
And that's where, as Tracy Crouch pointed out in her recent fan-led review, at grassroots level, that's really, really important for all football, but it's for women's football in particular, because socially, women's football is doing a really good job in helping get women from different societies, different cultures, getting to meet in terms of fitness level. So the money should be there for grassroots level football, because that's as important as the Premier League, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think also because women, more so, I would say, than some men, this is my opinion only, but we would need a safe place to practice a sport, a place where we aren't, you know, approached by people that want to take up space, because that's something that we've all been experienced, is that when we've been around playing football, then men come and take our space and take over. And the fact that there is such a lack of space to do that, like, is absolutely harmful as well. Like, we pay for 40 weeks of three quarters of a pitch once a week, we pay over £10,000.
How much?
Over £10,000.
For three quarters of a pitch?
No, it's two-thirds of a pitch. For 40 weeks, we pay over £10,000.
Wow. That's...
And that's the only space that we can find that is within Greater London. We'd have to leave Greater London to find a space that could house that many people for that long. We've been quoted, you know, a quarter of a pitch is £100 per hour. And it's just impossible to find good spaces.
And with that pitch, does that come with use of changing facilities, or do you have to turn up in your kit?
I mean, most of us do anyway, but there is changing room facilities, yes. It's to be able to play, you know, it's an all-weather pitch. It's just been refurbished, and that's why the price is so crazy. But we can't find an alternative pitch that will house that many people.
Do you know what, Sophia? To my shame, of all the problems and difficulties that I assumed were happening at grassroots football, the safety of women wasn't one that occurred to me. And I'm slightly embarrassed about that fact. Because then also it's 2022. You shouldn't have to worry about your own safety when you're playing football. But finances aside, Sophia, we've got the Euros coming up. Where do you think women's football in England stands at the moment compared to, say, Sweden or the rest of Europe or America?
I think it's in a fairly good position. I do think that there is some idea of greatness in England. That kind of maybe also spills over to the men's side. You know, it's coming home kind of thing. But I do think that it is apparent that that efforts are being made to really elevate the women's football here as well at the top level.
Yeah. Sophia, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We wish you all the best for the rest of the season and to the rest of your club. And hopefully we'll get to talk again in the future.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, Kieran, we know about the level of disparity between the two teams, but what was interesting is just as we finished recording, because I pressed stop too early, Sophia was talking about how they're victims of success. Women's football is doing very well, which means that many, many more young women and non-binary people want to play football, but they simply can't afford to let them do it because they haven't got the space or the facilities to let. So you're losing people from grassroots football because the money's not trickling down from football. And we're talking small amounts of money. I mean, it's well, although having said that, she said about £10,000 for two thirds of a pitch for a year. That's a lot of money. But for the sake of £10,000-£20,000 a year, we're losing young women, young people from the game. And grassroots football is where it all starts. It's the most important thing in football. And that was really disturbing to hear that the success of women's football at the top level is causing problems at the grassroots level.
It's crazy. And the thing about football is that it's good for health, it's good for community, it's good for education.
Of course.
It brings people together on so many different levels. We have a discussion about that. You go down to Porcelain's Arms as a Crystal Palace fan, but you will engage in conversations with a plumber, a lawyer, an accountant, a singer and so on, that you would never have had otherwise. And it is such a force for good that it should be viewed as part of the NHS at grassroots level. It's a shame that the opportunities, and Clapton are a fantastic club, but they are one of dozens and dozens, hundreds of fantastic clubs who are doing amazing things. And just a little bit of seed capital, a little bit of financial support. And, should we be blaming the local councils for this? Well, and this is, I'm not political at all, but they're having their budgets taken away.
Yeah.
Therefore, should it be a central government issue that there should be a greater investment in this? Because we all benefit in the long run from exercise and coming together.
It you can't help but be political about it because, over previous decades, we've had governments that have happily sold off sports grounds all over the country or allowed them to be sold off for housing development. So it is political. Everything's political, as my son would say. But and even things like Sophia talking about the lack of safe space for women to play football.
Shocking.
And it is part of the problem that it didn't occur to me that that was a problem. And I was kind of speechless there for a moment because it's just, we go along our merry way as blokes, not realizing the issues that women are facing at all levels. And it's anyway, on that sad note, Kieran, if any of our listeners would like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, that would be lovely. And they could do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball, or perhaps this month they could donate some of that money instead to Clapton Community FC. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com, and I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, once again, folks, thanks for all the feedback. Thanks for communicating with us, putting us right when we're wrong, which it does happen quite regularly. And it's great that you're on the ball. If you want to support us through Patreon or just through listening, that's grand. If you want to help us in some other way, and just send some good karma to the show. If you go on to that Apple app, and now Spotify, I believe, are doing it as well. And if you can give us a review, it helps us in the charts. The more reviews that we get, it doesn't matter what you say. You can say that you'd rather have the show presented by Sven-Goran Eriksson and Daphne from Scooby-Doo. doesn't make a blind bit of difference, apparently, according to producer Guy. But it helps us in the charts, and it helps us to have a degree of credibility when we're trying to book guests, which, of course, evaporates in seconds once we start wittering away talking the usual
answers. Indeed, yeah, yeah. Well, does saying that Daphne from Scooby-Doo was the one that I was most interested in as a young man, is that nonsense?
Not
intelligent woman. I've always liked an intelligent woman, Kim. we need to find a way of ending this pod without it meandering into every pod we do ends ... essentially. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.